Now from the KSFR Newsroom at Noon looks at the top local news headlines for this Thursday, October 17th.
The more than 10,000 employees of Los Alamos National Laboratory are back to work today, just hours after Congress approved and President Obama signed legislation to end the government shutdown that had lab workers on paid leave for more than 2 weeks. The lab had planned a nearly complete shutdown on Monday. Nearby Bandelier National Monument, which was closed during the shutdown and missed out on visitors from Albuquerque's International Balloon Fiesta, reopened at noon today. You'll hear more details on Bandelier in the feature segment of At Noon coming up shortly. Complaints from New Mexico homeowners about illegal liens being placed on their homes by a water filtration company has prompted Attorney General Gary King to sue the firm for violating New Mexico's Unfair Practices Act. The AG's action targets Universal Water Systems, also known as EcoWater New Mexico, and its owner. King says despite warnings to stop, the company has continually violated consumer rights through deceptive and high-pressure sales tactics in their door-to-door sales of high-priced water filtration systems. Local labor union leader John Hendry is withdrawing from an active role in the Santa Fe mayoral campaign of Javier Gonzalez. Until recently, Hendry had been the chairman and treasurer of Progressive Santa Fe, a political action committee supporting Gonzalez, the former chair of the New Mexico Democratic Party. Progressive Santa Fe has been criticized for hiring a firm to perform background research on mayoral candidates, an action Hendry initially said he had no knowledge of. Today's New Mexican reports that mayoral candidate Roman Abeta is asking the AFL-CIO to investigate Hendry's actions, which Abeta says have been misleading. The University of New Mexico plans to postpone a financial aid change that tightens eligibility for scholarships for first-year students. The Albuquerque Journal reports UNM officials decided to put off the new academic requirements for at least a year because of criticism from advocates for minority and lower-income students. The change called for incoming freshmen to have a high school grade point average of 3.0 or higher to qualify for the $1,500 Bridge Scholarship. That's up from 2.5 GPA. In another change, a new aid program will provide a $1,000 grant to students who apply for financial aid with a high school GPA of 2.5. The Santa Fe School Board has approved a partnership between the district and United Way of Santa Fe County to establish the Santa Fe Early Learning Center. The center, to be located at the old Agua Fria Elementary School campus, will provide early childhood services in Santa Fe County. Its mission is to prepare preschool children for successful entry into elementary school. The school district says 60% of New Mexico's children begin kindergarten between 12 and 18 months, educationally behind their peers in other states. Many do not catch up, negatively impacting individual student success and high school graduation rates. A $375,000 grant from the New Mexico Health Insurance Exchange will fund an effort to make college students aware of their health insurance options under the Affordable Care Act. Representatives from the UNM Health Sciences Center will be engaging students and their communities in an awareness campaign. It's estimated some 75% of students have no health insurance, while 80% of folks eligible to participate are either unaware they qualify or don't know where to obtain information. Two accolades in the news for Santa Fe today. The City Different is ranked the second most popular tourism destination, according to Condé Nast Traveler's Reader's Choice Awards. Charleston, South Carolina, was the top-rated destination in that survey. Santa Fe rose from fourth place last year. And USA Today has named Santa Fe one of America's top mountain biking towns. The newspaper credits the city for its mountain views and history, along with its more than 50 miles of bicycling trails at venues including the Dale Ball and La Tierra Trail Systems. The city of Santa Fe is placing 11 new trash and recycling receptacles around the perimeter of the downtown plaza. It's part of a beautification effort undertaken by the city with purchase made by the Environmental Services Division. Crews are installing cement slabs now through the end of the month for the containers equipped with separate bins for paper, plastic, and trash. Weather for Santa Fe, sunny skies today and right through the weekend. Look for daytime temperatures in the upper 50s and overnight lows in the upper 20s to low 30s. I'm Tom Tropebridge, KSFR News.
Thank you, Tom. And At Noon on KSFR will continue in just a moment.
Support comes from New Mexico Educators Federal Credit Union, where the more you participate in your not-for-profit financial cooperative, the more money you earn. For details on Earn Your Return, go to nmefcu.org or visit their branch on St. Michael's Drive.
Dan Garrity back with you now as At Noon segues to today's feature stories. The big news in New Mexico and across the nation today is Congress's action late Wednesday to end the federal government shutdown and avert a first-ever default on U.S. debt payments. Now, national parks and monuments in our state can unlock the gates. Federal civilian employees at our state's numerous military installations can return to work. And our two national laboratories can toss aside those plans they had for shuttering operations as of next week. House Representative Ben Ray Luan of New Mexico's 3rd Congressional District joins us now by phone. Ben Ray, the immediate crisis has ended with a plan that now funds the government through January 15th and assures timely payment of government debt until February 7th. Your thoughts on this stand down for the time being?
Sure. Well, last night, Dan, we took action to pass a piece of legislation. Sadly, we had 144 Republicans vote no on this legislation, even though it was a compromise piece of legislation. And I absolutely would have liked to have seen this legislation extend the debt ceiling for a longer period of time, showing more certainty, and trying to reverse sequestration levels as well. So the numbers that were agreed to were the Republican numbers for the short term. That's what intrigued me this whole time, is Republicans said that the president or that Democrats refused to compromise, when Democrats compromised quite a bit on this, even to the point where we have some numbers now for the short term that we're very concerned about. But with that being said, we have finally prevented furloughs at the national labs in New Mexico, both Los Alamos and Sandia, who were set for closure going into this weekend. And this was just no way to run the government. Still very frustrating going into this and seeing that we will be having the same discussion in January and in February potentially.
And what information can you share with us on that conference committee that will work now toward a compromise budget plan by Friday, December 13th?
Yes, well, you know, the importance of the conference committee is to get the House and Senate together to compromise and negotiate, if you will, on a budget. So if you remember, during the last election cycle, House Republicans were running around the country, Paul Ryan, saying that Democrats in the Senate were not doing their job by passing a budget. And so when we came back, Paul Ryan got his way. He passed a budget that would actually cut the labs, cut more programs across the country beyond even sequestration. And the Senate also passed a budget. The Democrats in the Senate led the effort. What happened was, Speaker Boehner and House Republicans refused to appoint a conference committee last March. And in the Senate, I think it was 16 or 17 times that Ted Cruz and Mike Lee prevented Speaker or Leader Reid from appointing their conference committee. So all of this could have been averted if Republicans wouldn't have gotten in the way of preventing the Congress from getting together in a conference committee on the budget. But with that being said, the conference committee has been appointed to try to come up with a budget so that we can avert these problems in the future. I am hopeful that they will do their job. Everyone has said that they want to get together and have these conversations, but the last time this happened, it fell apart. And you'll remember the last time a group like this got together was the Budget Control Act, which is where sequestration was born.
And what of other work that now needs to be done, as in, say, a new farm bill? That farm bill has provisions pertaining to the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP, that some 21% of New Mexicans rely on.
Well, Dan, you're absolutely right. You know, when New Mexico was listed as the hungriest state when it came to kids, so many kids in New Mexico living in poverty and not knowing where the next meal is going to come from is something that we should be very saddened by and be ashamed by in our beautiful state of New Mexico. But the Farm Bill does provide strong support for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Programs for hungry people, especially kids, those in need, even our veterans, sadly, that are sometimes go without and that are still homeless today. So I guess the silver lining is that there is a conference committee that's been put together also on the Farm Bill to finally negotiate this bill. But where there still are some concerns is it wasn't too long ago when Eric Cantor, the Republican leader in the House, brought forth another big cut to the Supplemental Nutrition Program. So they've taken an additional $40 billion out of the program in the House. They took it out of the Farm Bill initially, the House Republicans. And so we're hoping that the senators, the Democratic senators, will stand strong and bring the programs back together to get this moving. And that coupled with immigration reform. The United States Senate has passed an immigration reform bill, but House Republicans continue to get in the way of this. So I'm hopeful that the Farm Bill could move, the immigration reform bill could move. And the tone yesterday, watching all of the interviews of what I guess I would describe as moderate Republicans and Tea Party Republicans, in an interview with CNN, Aaron Schock out of Illinois described his caucus, which he describes himself as a moderate, as the same caucus. And Dana Bash from CNN asked him if he was calling the others insane, and he only giggled a bit. But that's what's been happening this week, is you've seen the Tea Party caucus fighting with the Republicans in the caucus, and they seem to have a huge split. So I don't know who's going to step up and speak up, but it seems that Ted Cruz has a control over a bunch of folks, and I just don't know where it's going to go again.
There's a lot now on Congress's plate needing attention, especially when you take into consideration the not-so-distant dates when we might yet again find ourselves revisiting funding for the government. What's the schedule? Will the House be putting its nose to the grindstone?
Well, that's what's intriguing, Dan. So Eric Cantor and House Republicans, sent members home twice during this shutdown. And we're on recess now until Tuesday. We come back next week for a short week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And then there's a recess again during that weekend. So, you know, at least with the calendar that Eric Cantor and Speaker Boehner still have put us on, that the Republicans in the House were in charge, I'm not certain, what they're going to be doing. But at least right now, it looks like we're back on the calendar that he had originally put together. And I'm not certain if he's going to change that. But you're absolutely right. We need to stay here. We need to work. We need to make sure that we're getting the work done. And I'm only hopeful that Eric Cantor and, again, the House Republicans, especially Tea Party members, listen to the pulse of what's happening around the country and that they take time to understand that people were really hurt now. People that depended on services that were turned away, small businesses that work with the federal government who weren't able to get permits, like fishermen and others. The public lands that were closed down, what that did to New Mexico outfitters that depend on that service, ecotourism in New Mexico, our veterans who are getting turned away. This is no way to do things, and I'm certainly hopeful that they will listen to the pain that they caused and that they never do this again.
Congressman Ben Ray Luan, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR.
KSFR programming is underwritten in part by PNM, putting more resources into renewable energy. PNM has built 5 new solar plants since 2011 and is building 2 new solar centers this year. PNM now produces enough solar to power over 13,000 homes and enough wind to power 94,000 homes. If you have a question for PNM, you can talk to them on Twitter or Facebook or visit PNM online at pnm.com.
20 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Student loan default. It's an increasing problem here in our state and across the nation. The trend is also in evidence at the Santa Fe Community College. Joining us now to speak to the issue is SFCC's Director of Finance, Scott Whitaker. Scott, give us your overview on this matter.
Yes, it is a statewide and actually a national trend of default rates going up for student loan borrowers. What has happened is the government, the way they calculate who's considered a defaulted student loan has changed a little bit. They have gone from looking at a two-year window when the student enters repayment on their student loan. In the past, they had looked at a two-year window to see if that student had defaulted. If they didn't default in that two-year window, they weren't considered a defaulted loan. If they defaulted after 2 years, they were still considered defaulted. They just weren't calculated in the college's default rate.
And for those of our listeners unfamiliar with student loans, perhaps you can tell us more about the loan instrument itself.
It's a monthly repayment. I kind of think of it as like a car payment. You pay it monthly. It accrues interest, and you need to make that monthly payment. You have 6 months before they put you into default status. I mean, if you miss a payment, you're delinquent, but that doesn't come with any sort of big problems. But after 6 months of not making a payment or being behind on your payments, then that's when they consider you in default.
And just as with any other loan, there are penalties for delinquency.
Before you go into default, the only penalties are the accrued interest. That continues to keep accruing, but the penalties start really racking up once you go into default.
And what's causing this escalation of student loan defaults? Is it simply a matter of current economic realities for younger people in our slow recovery from the recession?
That's a good question. There's probably a variety of factors. I don't think interest rates are a factor. The interest rates on student loans are very reasonable and have been for a while and continue to be. Right now it's basically a 3.86% loan, so that's certainly a good rate. I think part of the problem is that student loans are very easy to get. The government has made it easy for students to get student loans, and they can borrow a lot of money on a student loan, even to attend a relatively inexpensive college like Santa Fe Community College. And students, because it's easy money to get, they take it without necessarily giving a lot of thought to having to repay it. And then especially if they don't complete their degree, and they just drop out, those are the ones that have a hard time repaying that loan. And certainly the economy is a factor, I would think. We've seen the rates rising ever since the recession started in 2008, 2009. We've seen our default rate go up. So I think that does play a factor in it as well.
And let's talk about some of the consequences of student loan delinquencies. Does it require, for instance, getting assistance from a credit counseling service to help negotiate the debt?
Well, yeah, there's a lot of things that begin to happen once a student goes into default, and none of them are really very good for the student. One is that they immediately become ineligible for more financial aid, not just student loans, but Pell Grants or any other type of college-based financial aid. They become ineligible for that. So that would make it difficult for them to go back and finish their schooling so that they could go out and get a good job if that was their issue. Also, they will not receive a federal tax refund when they do their taxes. If they've got a $2,500 tax refund coming to them, that gets just taken by the government and applied to their defaulted student loan. Another thing that happens is the government sues them and takes them to court and gets a judgment against them and starts to garnish wages and those kind of things to get the money paid off. So it's something that really should be avoided at all costs.
Younger people of college age will often have no significant credit history. Before they acquire a student loan, are they appraised of the risks?
Yes. You're right about the credit. There's no credit credit report ever pulled. It doesn't matter whether the student has bad credit or no credit or great credit. That doesn't play into it at all because no credit report is involved. But yes, the government for a long time has required that all students getting a student loan go through something called entrance loan counseling. And that is an online process, and it's a tutorial, and it makes them answer questions correctly to move on and that kind of thing. And make sure they understand what it is they're getting into, what the options they have when they go into repayment, the importance of repayment, and the consequences of default. What we have done with our rate going up here at the community college, one thing that we've done, one change we've made, is instead of having that as an online tutorial, we have students meet with our loan coordinator and she in person, and she sits down and talks to them and goes through all this material in person and really tries to make sure they understand what it is they're getting into. And we've just started that this fall.
And specifically for Santa Fe Community College, is the student loan default rate relatively on par with what's seen across the nation?
Yeah, for a two-year public college, we're on par, but it's a disturbing trend, and it's something that we're taking steps to address to try and bring it down, because once you there's a threshold, and it's 30%. Once 30% of your borrowers go into default, the federal government comes in and they dictate a plan that you must follow in order to continue to offer financial aid. And no one wants to go through that. It basically would require us to hire a new employee just to implement the plan. It's something that we, desperately would want to avoid, and it wouldn't make us look good, certainly. And we're not near that threshold, but we're trying to take steps so that we get so that we don't even approach it.
Santa Fe Community College Director of Finance Scott Whitaker, many thanks for joining us here at noon.
Support comes from Mountain Cloud Zen Center in Santa Fe, where there's no need to don robes or shave heads. The miracle of everyday life, that's where real awakening happens, in the midst of ordinary lives. A taste of the deep, clear peace of authentic Zen can be found at Mountain Cloud Zen Center. Thursday night talks and Sunday morning practice with resident Zen teacher Henry Shookman. Everyone always welcome. Learn more at mountaincloud.org.
The Santa Fe Association of Realtors has just come out with its data for the third quarter of the year. Overall, it's a largely positive take on area homes, both price-wise and in matters of inventory levels. Victoria Murphy is the association's president and joins us now on the line. Victoria, one of the noteworthy statistics cited is that homes are spending far fewer days on the market. The report says it's down to 154, and that's the shortest duration since 2007. Can you speak to that bit of good news?
Dan, it really is. Our days on the market have gone down significantly, and I think there's a couple of different factors in there. One is that we have sellers who are now pricing their properties to sell, and we've also had a lack of inventory, and so we've had quite a few buyers who are looking for properties. We don't have that many on the market, and so when you have such a short supply of inventory, it's going to go faster.
And Victoria, median price quotes can vary greatly when we speak of third quarter results versus year-over-year numbers. Where do we stand currently with median home prices?
We are at 265 right now, which was a 30% increase. The thing that concerns me when we talk about median in price is a lot of people think that is what all of the homes are going for, what the average home cost is in Santa Fe. And that number really is reflective of what has sold in what areas. For instance, about a little over a year ago, we had a property that sold in Suzuki that was in the $12 million range, and it really skewed our numbers significantly. And especially in the Suzuki area, it made it look like everything was extremely expensive there, which is not necessarily the case.
And the health of the local market. As it improves, are we going back to activity not seen since before the collapse of real estate overall?
You know, we're starting to head that direction, and I know we're hearing that other states, such as California and Arizona, are there, and they're seeing significant price increases. We're not at that point yet. We did a really wonderful stabilization on our pricing, and I think we're going to remain there probably until next year. Of course, I don't have a crystal ball, but that's my projection. And I think as we start seeing more and more inventory coming onto the market, we're going to see those prices starting to come up also. What has also happened, which is very surprising with the lack of inventory that we have, is that we also have a shortage in the rental market.
Before the recession, many people were buying homes as investment properties or for use as vacation homes. Are the buyers currently on scene speculators or people who plan on living here year-round?
The ones that I'm personally working with are looking at buying a second home at this point in time, but it's going to be a retirement home. So they are planning on moving here anywhere between the next year to the next 5 years. But they want to go ahead and make that investment. They believe that now is the time to buy and get that in play.
So overall, these are good, solid third quarter numbers. But now in this final quarter, it's customary to expect a fall off, yes, as it's a historically less active part of the year?
Yes and no. When we started pulling our history probably about a month or two ago, we started looking at it and we found out that Santa Fe really doesn't have a season, per se, that we had always thought. Everybody had always thought, okay, here comes the summer. We've got the opera starting. We're going to get all these people coming in, and this is the strongest time to sell homes. What we're starting to see is that we also have people that are coming in that fourth quarter, or there are people that are here in town that are starting to look for a bigger home or a smaller home, and they want to be in place in time for the holidays. So we're not seeing a downturn in the fourth quarter. We may see that this year because of the shutdown. It did affect our housing market nationally, and we believe it might touch us a tiny bit.
Victoria Murphy with the Santa Fe Association of Realtors, many thanks for joining us here at noon.
Programming on KSFR is underwritten in part by Medlin Mechanical, a full-service plumbing company specializing in green energy solutions for homes and business in the Santa Fe area for over 5 years. Medlin Mechanical's geothermal and solar systems are designed to cut energy costs and reduce carbon footprint. And tax credits for new systems are available through 2016. To learn more, visit medlamechanical.com or call 577-8087. That's 577-8087.
34 minutes past the hour as At Noon continues. Bandelier National Monument reopened at the top of this hour after the 16-day government shutdown. Joining us now is Bandelier Ranger Chris Johnson. Chris, tell us about Bandelier's operations today.
We won't be running the shuttle buses today, so people should just drive on in to the visitor center. The buses will start again tomorrow and extend through the 28th of October. But it's a beautiful day. We're so glad that the people can come in while it's still the gorgeous autumn weather, and the leaves down here are all yellow now, and it's just a great time to visit.
And we'd been hearing during the shutdown about members of the public who were outraged that they couldn't have access to all national parks and monuments. What sort of feedback did you receive?
I was not one of the people that was allowed to work during the furlough, and so I have not run into anybody who actually showed up. I know that people certainly were disappointed. The media got the word out a lot about national parks. I'm sure that helped. But people in town, of course, love to come here, and they just miss being able to come during this beautiful time of the year. And, of course, we missed all the Balloon Fiesta visitors, which is a big bunch of folks that love to come up each day when the ascensions are done. Then they come on up to Bandelier, and that wasn't an option this year.
And, Chris, is there anything else you'd like us to know about Bandelier's post-shutdown operations?
Well, starting tomorrow, we will be having the shuttle buses again. People can drive in before 9 o'clock. They can drive in after 3 o'clock. But in the middle, until the through the 28th of October, there's free shuttle bus service from White Rock. And of course, because we don't have the extra parking across the creek, the shuttle buses are a real necessity. As we get farther into the fall, we have less visitors, and we can get by without them. But for now, we really appreciate people's cooperation with using the buses during the middle of the day.
Bandelier National Park Ranger Chris Judson, many thanks for joining us here at noon on KSFR. 12:36 here in the newsroom, just past the bottom of the hour, is the perfect time to spend 60 seconds with our resident curmudgeon, Christopher Hagen.
Mattress Firm has a new slogan for their TV ads, "Don't make an 8-year mistake." That's tied into the company's admonition to replace your mattress every 8 years. Why replace your mattress every 8 years? Well, according to Mattress Firm, you need to replace your mattress every 8 years because every 8 years your mattress doubles in weight. Does your mattress allegedly double in weight because it or you eats too much? No. It's allegedly because of skin flakes, skin oil, and moisture, and dust mites, and their feces. Wow, that's a mighty lot of mighty mite feces. So, taking Mattress Firm's formula of a mattress's weight doubling every 8 years, an average brand-new queen-size mattress weighing 100 pounds, after 16 years, it would weigh 400 pounds. Don't make an 8-year mistake? Huh, I once made a 4-year mistake. Then I got divorced. For KSFR, I'm Christopher Hagen.
And with that, we'll conclude today's edition of At Noon, KSFR's extended noon news hour. Dan Garrity with you here at the news desk. With many thanks to my contributing colleague today, Tom Trowbridge. We'll be back tomorrow with more news of and for New Mexico for you. And as always, we hope you join us.